myths, assumptions. Call it what you will, but historically, there have been many misconceptions about English learners. We are going to dispel some of those ideas in this episode of Educationally Speaking. Welcome to Educationally Speaking, a podcast which focuses on important topics related to education that affect students, parents, teachers, and administrators. My name is Sarah Davis, the communications specialist for Oakland Schools and the host of this podcast. Due to the pandemic and how it affected learning these past several months, there are many students who are going to need additional support and resources this school year. In particular, those conversations seem to center around English learners. A recent article published in Education Week pointed out that just because English learners may need more support this fall doesn't mean that they are behind other students. Our guests today are here to talk about assumptions the general population often has when it comes to our English learners and how to dispel those assumptions. Please welcome Suzanne Tuohy, Oakland School Supervisor of Instruction and Pedagogy, Christy Osborne, ESL Consultant for Oakland Schools, Rob Belt, ELD Instructor and Trauma-Informed Practitioner for the Novi Community School District, and Hadil Azo, K-12 ELD Consultant with the West Bloomfield School District. Welcome to all of you. I want to start off first by going through some acronyms here because they can get confusing. So when we say ESL, that stands for English as a Second Language. ELD means English Language Development, and EL means English Learner. And I just kind of want to get those straight because I've already said a couple of them. And going forward in this podcast, we'll likely be saying them again, and I want to make sure our audience has a clear understanding of what each acronym represents. So with that, Suzanne, can you define for us what an English learner is?
Well, first, thank you for having me on the show. English learner is defined in our federal law. The Elementary and Secondary Education Act defines an English learner as an individual who is aged 3 through 21, enrolled or preparing to enroll in an elementary or secondary school, not born in the United States, or whose native language is a language other than English, a Native American or Alaska Native, a native resident of outlying areas, and who comes from an environment where a language other than English has had a significant impact on the individual's level of English language proficiency, or who is migratory, whose native language is a language other than English, and who comes from an environment where a language other than English is dominant. And this is really important, whose difficulties in speaking, reading, writing, or understanding the English language may be sufficient to deny the individual or the student the ability to meet the challenging state academic standards, the ability to successfully achieve in classrooms where the language of instruction is English, or the opportunity to participate fully in society. So that's a big definition. It's also important to note that nationally, over 80% of elementary English learners and 65% of secondary English learners are born in the United States. Nationally, in Michigan and in Oakland County, English learners represent the fastest growing subgroup of K-12 students. We've seen a steady historical increase of enrollment of English learners in Oakland County over the last 10 years, from just over 10,000 in 2009 to nearly 14,000 in 2019. Now, in 2020, we saw the first real dip in enrollment for English learners in the county. We suspect the dip is a result of overall decreased enrollment of all students during the pandemic. So presently in Oakland County, we have approximately 176,000 students, and of that total, nearly 13,000 are identified as English learners. The percentage of English learners in Oakland County school districts ranges from 1 to nearly 25%. That means that in some of our districts, 1 in 4 students is identified as an English learner. Across the county, students speak 119 different languages. The top languages spoken include Spanish, which is spoken by over 3,500 students. Approximately 1,500 students report speaking Arabic, 750 speaking Japanese, and 650 students speaking Telugu, a language of India. Our English learners bring a wide range of skills and assets to the classroom. They and their families add rich cultural and linguistic diversity in our Oakland County communities. I'm excited for you to learn about the amazing work happening in two of our local school districts who exemplify the highest standards of supporting and engaging English learners and their families.
Okay, thanks for the explanation, Suzanne, especially, I mean, those were some really interesting stats there about how many students are English learners. Christy, we've talked on other educationally speaking episodes about how the pandemic has brought to light some major inequalities in our education system. So what are some special considerations that have impacted our English learners more than others?
Well, first I want to say hello to everybody. We are so excited to be here. And thanks again, Sarah, for inviting us here to discuss this important topic, equity for our English learners and also their families. And as we already named and discussed, our English learners do come with rich linguistic and cultural strengths. And it's really important to acknowledge that some of our immigrant, refugee, and undocumented families come with strong educational backgrounds already, while others may come to us with limited prior schooling or food insecurity or struggles with resettling. And so to answer your question on inequities, we do see evidence of the impact of inequity on all of these levels. And unfortunately, it's not a new concept. And this includes education as well as resources for general health and well-being. As you named, the pandemic really just brought them to light in an even clearer way. And some of our historically marginalized communities and families have been impacted more than others. One silver lining is that we do have a chance now to rebuild in partnership with our families so that together we can create a school community that honors and supports everyone. So today we're going to discuss a few of the inequities that districts are coming together to address as we move forward into the 21-22 school year, such as communicating with our families, equitable access and opportunities for technology and home learning, and also meeting the social, emotional, cultural, and health needs in addition to academic needs of students and families. We call this a whole child approach. We need to move beyond academics and create supportive, equitable, in-person learning environments. And this is a big task. This might require a shift in our mindsets. Instead of looking at these inequities as barriers or deficits of our students and families, we can shift to an asset-based mindset, a strengths-based mindset that can allow us to recognize the strengths and assets that our families bring to us and leverage them to address inequities. An example of this might be, instead of focusing on limited English as a language barrier, we can recognize that many of our learners are multilingual. And this is another term of acronym that I'd like to introduce. An MLL, multilingual learner, may come to us with multiple home languages. We can tap into those strengths, really recognizing the languages that our families can speak, sometimes two, three, or four. And many have a full repertoire of that are fluent in English and other languages and academic language as well. Suzanne and I invited Robin Hadil here today so we could celebrate all that their districts have accomplished on behalf of English learners. And we also really want to give a shout out to all of the districts who've worked really hard to build equitable practices and policies.
All right, thanks, Christy. I really like that asset-based approach. It just seems just to be such a more positive way of approaching things. Rob, welcome to the show. This is the part where our local districts kind of chime in and, you know, talk about what you guys are doing at the district level. Can you sort of discuss how Novi has stepped up to some of the challenges Christy has described?
Yes, absolutely. And thank you for having me on the show. It is a privilege of mine to be teaching in the Novi Community School District. We have a little over 2,000 language learners in our district, and we have 44 languages spoken throughout the homes in our community. So as Christy mentioned, inequities are not a new phenomenon. What are important are the ways in which we address them. For example, we mentioned communication between school and home. We understand that our English learner and multilingual families are often looking for the right balance between being there to support their kids who are learning virtually and their careers, just as so many of us have done and we continue to do. So in Novi, we've had a parent engagement group, which is a small team of teachers and administrators that meet with our English learning and bilingual families to discuss things like social emotional health, community resources, and strategies to support children. We typically meet in the evenings, and these meetings have really taken off. It has been mutually beneficial to everybody involved. And we also talked about the inequity of access. To address that, the Novi Community School District not only provided a device, either a tablet or a laptop, to every student, but we also loaned out furniture like desks and chairs to any family that requested it. And it's really helped to level the field, and it gave students a consistent, quality home learning environment.
All right, thanks, Rob. Really great stuff there from Novi. Adil, can you talk about West Bloomfield's EL population and some things your district has put in place to help with inequities?
Sure, Sarah. I want to say hello to everyone and thank you for having me on the show. So first, to share a little about our West Bloomfield English learner population, we have around 400 students actively receiving ELD, English Language Development Services, in West Bloomfield, and hundreds of multilingual learners in the district, since many are now former ELs being monitored as required by the state, or maybe never qualified for ELD services, but still have more than one language spoken at home. Our English learners represent over 60 different languages, combined with the top languages being Arabic, Chaldean, Spanish, and Japanese. Spanish and Japanese are more commonly spoken by our newcomer families. We love the diversity we have in West Bloomfield and are really proud of it. So some things we've put into place to address your question that we've put into place with inequities, particularly for EL families, since the pandemic started, are online parent meetings, online student tutoring, parent phone calls to relay info verbally and not only through email, and bilingual family liaison support, much like some of our surrounding districts, I'm sure. We want to ensure all of our families are accessing the necessary information regarding the pandemic and learning options. So all of our major district communications were translated and continue to be translated to the languages of our newcomer families. Our bilingual staff call families to check in as needed, because we know that this is a preferred method of communication for some, and it allows parents to ask questions in their home language directly and be able to receive that answer, right away in most cases. Some staff utilize the Talking Points app to communicate in a variety of languages with families, and we've also added bilingual family liaison support, as I mentioned, over the last 2 years, which means that some of our English learner paraprofessionals, our bilingual paraprofessionals, now have office hours to support families beyond the school day. Our ELD staff has Zoomed with several parents to teach them about Canvas, which is our newer learning management system, since that was a learning curve for many. And we've had to be creative with how we provide our before or after school EL tutoring. So we moved this online so our tutors can Zoom with students and work around parent and student schedules. And we've built this tutoring online really for all students, not only ELs. West Bloomfield also provided one-to-one Chromebooks for each student and district hotspots during the pandemic, because we realized that having the necessary internet connection for students learning online may not be affordable by all families. And our district mental health specialist provides ongoing resources to students, families, and staff. And I can go on about all of the things we're putting into place, but I want to mention last but not least, last year, our West Bloomfield Board of Education adopted an anti-racism resolution to create more equitable and inclusive schools for all learners. And this resolution really speaks to some of these inequities and what we as a district are committing to do to address them. And you can learn more about it on our district website if you'd like.
Thanks, Adil. And we also had a couple of other guests from West Bloomfield on a couple of podcast episodes ago, how to talk to your children about race and racism. And they also spoke about the anti-racism resolution that was recently passed in West Bloomfield. So thank you for sharing that. There's also a lot of assumptions out there when it comes to EL students, but there's another side that belongs with each one of these assumptions, where something that may be viewed as negative is actually a positive. Suzanne, can you pick an assumption you've heard out in the community and kind of unravel it for us?
Sure. So I think there's this longstanding assumption that families of immigrants, refugees, and other multilingual students are just not engaged in the school system. There's an assumption that their perceived lack of involvement might be because they don't care about the education of their children. But we know that all families care about the education of their children. Multilingual families play a key role in their children's language development, and they possess a wealth of knowledge about their children's language use in home and community environments. At Oakland Schools, we recognize families as experts in their children's language and learning and development. Engaging with families to learn from them about their children's language use and development is at the core of the language-focused family engagement that we encourage all of our districts to use. And I know that Hadil and Rob will share with you some things that they're doing to engage their families. And we work closely, at Oakland Schools, we work closely with our districts to help them plan family engagement programs, expand their outreach to multilingual families, and think creatively about meeting the needs of their multilingual communities.
Thank you, Suzanne. Hadil or Rob, do either of you have examples of how this assumption has been addressed by your school district?
Sure. I just want to say that being someone who comes from a multilingual family who immigrated to the U.S. when I was 5 years old, I can attest that this assumption of immigrant parent lack of involvement is not true at all. EL or bilingual parents are always eager to know about their child's progress and want to be involved in their education as much as possible. The issue is that the language barrier really puts a limit on how much they are able to voice their concerns or engage in parent events. For newer immigrants, not knowing enough about the school system itself can place a barrier. And also many are working long hours. So being mindful of the time that events are planned and offering choice is always a good thing. So again, this goes back to the making things equitable, not only for the students in the classrooms, but also the families who want to be involved, but need to be provided with the support to access these parent groups, meetings, or whatever it might be that the school has to offer. So having translators available is certainly wonderful and needed, but also reaching out to the families to make sure they know that their presence is important to the school, and maybe surveying them on topics of interest, things that are relevant to their culture or community, would really help make them feel a sense of belonging. And we've had parent meetings where we do encourage families to continue using their native languages at home, since that is an asset. And I know Rob has some additional examples and more to share on this.
Oh, thank you, Hadil. And Sarah, I cannot talk enough about the engagement of our families. Without their support, I quite literally would not be able to do my job effectively. And I want to clarify that when I say support, I'm not just talking about parents and caregivers supporting their children, but our families have been incredibly supportive to me and my colleagues. They check in to see how we're doing during the pandemic. They give grace, and in some cases, they even bring treats up to the school, just as a pick-me-up. And it's really on the teachers and the administration and the school system as a whole to ensure that we're giving parents a platform to participate in their child's education in a culturally responsive way. So things like body language, eye contact, asking and answering questions, these can all have cultural significance. And by leading with curiosity, we're able to ensure that we're giving parents a seat at the table where they can advocate for their children. Parents communicate with us on a regular basis. They want to know how to help. They want to use their voices, and they want to be physically present in our buildings, even during a time when they can't be due to the current health restrictions.
Okay, thank you, Rob. Christy, there's a couple of other assumptions out there. Can you name them and talk about the flip side of those ideas?
Yes, absolutely. But something I really want to bring attention to from Novi and West Bloomfield's examples that Rob and Hadil were sharing, I think it's really clear from this that equity really needs to be intentional and purposeful. It's just not something that happens on accident, right? It takes great planning and conversations and really starts with that asset-based mindset so that we're able to see the flip side as we creatively plan for equity. So as Rob used that phrase, being curious and looking at all of the pieces to look at how we can put them together in an equitable way. An example might be the term learning loss. And so let's challenge that term just a little bit. We've heard that term a lot in the media and in a lot of conversations about, you know, as we're looking forward to welcoming students back in the 21-22 school year. Along with this, there's an assumption that the reason for this learning loss is that English learners and other student groups, such as economically disadvantaged, may be completely disconnected from learning, and it says that there's a regression of skills. And I don't know about you, but I know for me, I learned a lot during the pandemic, and in some ways, I'm definitely returning with skills that I didn't have before. So that term learning loss, it just doesn't quite capture what we've gained. One reality is that when the pandemic started, many of our families' homes weren't set up for optimal learning. Some of our students weren't able to connect with teachers. However, we talked about that flip side. What started as a lack of access for many of our families allowed our districts to recognize and equip those families with tools they needed all along for digital, flexible, and authentic learning. They probably needed them before the pandemic, but we were able to provide that for them. Another assumption is that English learners are more behind than other students returning to school this fall. So teachers might look at their WETA scores, which is their English Language Proficiency Assessment, or other math and reading assessment data, and see some signs of regression. But however, that data does not tell the full story. That flip side is that, though there may be some mislearning, some of that data actually shows surprising academic gains, and there are some bright spots. And the flip side for that also is that we can build on those strengths such as multilingualism. And again, as Rob said, being curious about that and really thinking through how can we recognize it? How can we tap into it? How can we help them build an even richer academic language in all of their languages? And I want to leave this part with one quote from that article that you named earlier in the session. I love this quote. It shows how we can be supportive and curious as English learners come back. What English learners need is the scaffolding and the support to get them back where they once were and to continue progressing. And this is another area where our EL educators have invested much energy, so much time and passion, partnering with classroom teachers to make sure that we are looking for ways to support and build on what students are coming back to us with.
All right, thank you, Christy. And again, Rob and Hadil, can you provide some examples of the assumptions that Christy just went over and how your districts have responded to those assumptions?
Sure, and Christy, thank you so much for that insight. And I would add again, there is not a strong correlation between lack of access and English language proficiency. We know that there are rural students who have struggled with access. We know that there are socioeconomic factors that touch families of many backgrounds. And I have seen, just as Christy was saying, I've seen many of my students thrive within a virtual learning environment. And as a district, we strive to recognize and capitalize on those strengths. We have provided the technology to every student, virtual as well as in person. And we hold each other accountable. And also, it's somewhat frustrating that there's so much emphasis on that term learning loss. Because before we can even begin to talk about learning loss, we need to recognize our students' brain and body states. We know that some students will be dysregulated as they transition back. We know that many adults will also struggle. So in everything that we do in Novi, we focus on supporting each other. In my school, we've recently implemented regulation stations where students can engage in movement and in breathing. We have sensory rooms. We teach mindfulness explicitly, and we have reset spaces because sometimes as we start to build stamina back up for our students, sometimes they just need a minute to relax, to calm down, and to reset their brains, if you will, and focus on learning. So really our emphasis is on co-regulation and not co-escalation.
All right, great. Thanks, Rob. And Hadil?
Yeah, so I'd like to share a little about how our West Bloomfield ELD team started this year off, and that was by engaging in a discussion around equity for multilingual learners and what this means for us as EL educators. So something Suzanne and Christy mentioned earlier happened to also be a big takeaway from an article our team read from Ed Leadership, which highlights using an asset-based approach to educating English learners. And really that should be the case for all students. We began intentionally planning ways to do this through our ELPLCs, professional learning communities. And to start, one example is to use student portraits that ELD teachers or even students themselves can create and share with classroom or content teachers. This is sort of like looking a little more in depth at a student profile. We often discuss things like data and academic performance at articulation or transition meetings between teachers, but teachers rarely get to learn or hear about some of the most important things about students before they see them in the classroom. Maybe it's what an amazing soccer player he or she is, or how awesome she or he is at playing the violin, or maybe that they know how to practically run a family business over the summer or on weekends, or that they're fluent in four languages. So these are all assets that our multilingual learners bring to the classroom and school community. And the first step to an asset-based approach is to get to know more about our students beyond their assessment data or grades. Suzanne also mentioned the phrase asset-based support earlier. And to me, that not only applies to students, but also to the staff. We acknowledge the strengths that our staff brings to the table and are making efforts to increase our ELD teacher and classroom teacher collaboration through collaborative teaching or structured collaborative planning. So we see ELD teachers are EL or language specialists and classroom teachers are content specialists. So when the two team up and work together, the teaching and learning becomes more meaningful and accessible to all students. And this is something we strive for in any ELD program.
All right, thanks, Adil. Another key piece to all of this is the social emotional aspect. An assumption, especially for ELs, is that the past 17 months of the pandemic have been traumatic and have created collective trauma and mental health issues. But Rob, what is the truth about that assumption?
Trauma is relative, and not everyone responds in the same way to the same event. The characteristic of trauma is a deficit in universal needs. And when we see students behaving in an unfavorable way, those behaviors are a function of those unmet needs. And again, that's why it's so important that we lead with curiosity. Last spring, when the pandemic was starting, experts in the field began to predict that this would be a global traumatic event. On each continent, we experienced a chronic lack of predictability, isolation, and social and emotional restraint. Those are three things that the brain does not process well. But the degree to which this was felt differs greatly. Trauma is stored in the body, and while some felt intense fear, pain, and confusion, all of which can have lasting effects, others who experienced the same event seemed to be perfectly okay, and perhaps they didn't internalize those feelings in quite the same way. One of the reasons that this is the case is because we all have different resiliency factors, such as personality, connections, and the consistency of feeling safe and loved within a family. Resiliency is like a rubber band, and it's the body's way of bouncing back or snapping back after an adverse situation. The language of trauma is really through feelings and sensations. And again, in Novi, we're very intentional about providing the spaces and opportunities for our students. But even more importantly, our teachers are authentic and committed to sharing space with our children.
Thanks, Rob. Really interesting, especially for me personally, that definition of resiliency and how that kind of all comes together in the schools. Adil, do you have anything to add to this?
Sarah, I just want to mention and say that we're proud of our students for meeting the challenges of remote or hybrid schooling last year and continue to do really well. And also want to point out that many actually did well despite the challenges they had to face. Those who might maybe have anxiety in the classroom or being around others have been able or were able to learn more freely and focus on school in a different way during that remote learning period. We've had some high school students share this feedback with their ELD teacher. And for many, this type of learning actually worked. And even with the unpredictable school year we had, we were still able to exit many English learners who met the English proficiency mark on the WIDA Access last spring. So we're really happy about that. And obviously, some faced challenges along the way, but again, we're proud of them for so many reasons.
All right, great. A couple of you mentioned that you had some resources for our audience regarding this topic as well. Christy, would you like to start us off?
Sure. So Hadil and Rob shared so many impactful ways that our districts have supported the multifaceted needs of our families, and we talked about that phrase, the whole child, and really looking at all of the different ways that we can support them. But I want to take just a moment to bring our attention to another essential level of support that all of our families really need and something that we can tap into as educators, and that would be community. And so the pandemic, again, really made it clear that we need to meet all of those needs, social, emotional, academic, intellectual, as well as the general well-being of our students and families. We also really need to harness that power of connecting our families with the community and looking at those essential resources that their community organizations have available for food insecurity, clothing, financial support, and health needs of our families. And so I have a vast collection to share with you of community resources that several Oakland schools consultants put together, including specific resources for multilingual immigrant and refugee families, along with translated materials and forms from Wissam Brico, our refugee immigrant consultant here at Oakland Schools.
All right, great. And Suzanne, did you have something to add?
Yes, thank you, Sarah. I just wanted to add two additional resources. One is an excellent resource for both educators and community members. It's been collaboratively developed by the U.S. Office of English Language Acquisition, the Department of Education, the Office for Civil Rights, and the Department of Justice. It's called the English Language Learner Toolkit, and it outlines state and local school district legal obligations for English learners and their families. It summarizes 10 common civil rights obligations to English learners and their families and offers tools and resources to help schools and districts meet those obligations. Of course, links to that and the resources that Christy named are available in the show notes. And then lastly, Christy and I, in collaboration with our Oakland schools and district partners, provide regular professional learning opportunities for all educators to grow in their understanding of English learners and their families. So there is a document in the show notes called 21-22 Oakland Schools Professional Learning Opportunities for Educators of English Learners. And we'd encourage you to check that out if you're an educator.
Yes, and I see that you and Christy have provided me with the links, which makes my job for the show notes so much easier, so I appreciate that. And I think, Rob, you said that you had something else as well to add to our resources section.
I would add that Oakland County has a really wonderful youth assistance program, and a simple search for Novi Youth Assistance, for example, we'll direct you to the webpage and all of the resources that it offers. And then I would also say again, because connections and relationships are foundational, to look for those meaningful connections through city programs such as tennis or swimming, art, martial arts, whatever the child's interest might be.
That's a great idea, Rob, to you know, kind of remember that there are community resources available out there as well, and to look out for those to help. Suzanne and Christy, thank you for all the great work you do here at Oakland Schools, connecting our districts with the resources they need to support ELs. And Rob and Hadil, your work at the district level is nothing short of amazing and inspiring to all of us. You are truly making a difference in so many lives. So thank you for that. This podcast was brought to you by Oakland Schools Intermediate School District's Communication Services and is produced by Media Production and Distance Learning Manager Mark Hansen. Oakland Schools is a regional service agency in Oakland County, Michigan, that offers support services to school personnel, which are better delivered regionally and provide cost, size, and quality advantages to those we serve. I have been your host for this podcast, Sarah Davis, and you can find this in future episodes of Educationally Speaking on our Oakland Schools website at oakland.k12.mi.us and Anchor FM. We hope you will join us for our next episode, where we will continue to bring you topics that affect every student every day.